We're going to start to put a bow tie on our Jim Brown conversation. We're going to do our top five running backs of all time, get some viewer comments, but we have to start here. What do you guys think the Browns should do for the upcoming season, if anything at all, to honor Jim Brown?
You got an idea, Bull?
Yeah, I think they should do multiple things. There should be a 32 on the helmet, in my opinion, and 32 in the middle of the field.
That's what I think, too.
The Browns, in my opinion, in the Jimmy Haslam era, have not done a very good job honoring the greats of the franchise.
Well, they bring them back. They bring guys back.
Sometimes. But I've talked to some players off the field. I'm not naming any names, obviously.
Right.
And there's been – and I've said this to one member of the Browns front office. The guys have said, you know, like, you don't always feel welcome.
Yeah.
And I think they've gotten better the last couple of years. But they better do this right. Like,
yeah,
how many times has Washington been crushed for how they screwed up Sean Taylor things?
I know.
You know, like, this has got to be done right. On the helmet, on the field. And the Browns this year need to play with the heart of Jim Brown because they haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah.
And they need to play with the toughness and the fight and the heart that Jim Brown had. And putting it at 32 right in the middle of the field and on the helmets, that would say something.
I want the helmet at midfield with the 32.
Yeah.
I don't know if the league's going to allow that. I think there is a rule that it either has to be a logo or the shield.
That sucks.
If that's the case, I would change the logo.
Yeah, change the logo. Screw it.
I mean, I would literally change the logo to 32.
Yes.
And I was thinking about this yesterday, and I don't know that it'll be a rallying cry for the team because the team, although they knew him, met most, if not all, of the players had met him. They don't really, unless they're real students of the game, they probably don't understand the impact he had. You honor him by dedicating the season to him, and you go kick the league's ass.
That's it. Yeah.
Every single week, you play like it's your last down, your last game, and you bring back to this city the honor it had when Jim led the way. That's how you honor him.
Yeah.
You go play your ass off and you win. Simple.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. There should be a 32 on all the helmets. There should be a 32 on a helmet on the middle of the field. Stop trying to get cute with elf logos and new dog logos.
Yeah.
Just win.
Yeah.
Just win.
That's right.
And everything will take care of itself. What about you, Boogie? How do players look at that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would say I would like to take a delayed game, maybe every home game.
Oh, wow.
And then have the PA guy announce, like, we're taking this for Jim Brown to get the crowd – you know, showing their appreciation.
Wow.
That's something that I
So feel. Their first offensive play,
yeah.
just have Either everybody that, stand around and yeah. maybe play a video on yeah. the Jumbotron.
Every home
They're
game.
Not going to do it every home game.
Yeah. They probably won't, but
Because your first series, you're first and 15 to
yeah.
start.
But also the other team, to honor him, can decline that penalty.
Oh, that's interesting.
They don't have to accept the penalty.
He is right. They don't have to accept the delay of the game.
They can go out with 10 players maybe.
That's really
in
interesting.
The huddle,
I like that idea. 10
that
players.
That incorporates the other team showing respect for what he's just done for the game in general, not just the
Cleveland Browns. No, I like
Brown,
that.
So,
that's really smart.
You know what I'm saying? Also bring his wife out maybe for the first home game.
Right.
And just give her a moment of silence. Hopefully she's done grieving at the time.
Right.
So just little things like that alongside with the logos and the patches. Just something that would be more memorable.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
I mean, he was the first guy. He paved the way. Not only with his civil rights work for young black men in America to, you know, and Leroy talked about what he had to deal with, like having to stay in a different hotel. Like, we know those things happened, but it's still, every time you hear it, it's hard to believe, like,
it's
that
jarring.
These things happened. But, like, so he paved the way and he opened doors for so many people. But he also opened the doors in a way for stardom in football. Because to that point, baseball and horse racing and boxing were all bigger than football.
By far.
Right? And Jim Brown, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but to me it feels like Jim Brown was the first superstar in football.
Well, if you think about it, the year before the Browns, or the Super Bowl era began, the Browns won the world championship, the NFL championship.
Right.
And it really was coming into its own. He led the way into the Super Bowl era.
Yes. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of credence to that theory that he was the runway to today's NFL.
Right.
And I can't think off the top of my head. If I say this, I may regret it. But to me, it seems like he was really one of the first stars to go from athletics to acting and do it very, very well at a high level.
I can't think of a lot of others.
I wasn't alive. In my mind, as I'm trying to think of guys that have done it, many did it after. In fact, the guy that most, I think, he's most compared to is O.J. Simpson.
Right.
And O.J. Simpson famously transitioned into acting and had a pretty damn good career as an actor, too.
Yeah.
Because usually they'll just have guys do small appearances. You'll be like, oh, I've seen
yourself.
Yeah, cameo.
Yeah, as himself.
I've seen so-and-so. Oh, did you see him in the movie?
Right.
But to transition and be a star in stars in multiple films is amazing.
It is. Yeah. It really is. And it's a testament to, you said earlier, it's a testament to the kind of resolve that he had to be able to leave one arena at the top and immediately go seamlessly into another have major impact.
It is so tough, especially in this field that takes up a lot of your time. You have to have a special level of dedication and discipline
as an
athlete to transition to another field, where me being in that field now, how hard those actors work and study those lines, it's a whole nother dedication, discipline. So to be amazing at both of them, like I said, is just a testament to how special
he was. To Bull's point earlier, he was just the kind of person that his drive and will to be great, not will to make it.
Right.
You know, I remember one of the things we talked about in the interview, because we sat down for well over an hour. One of the things that we talked about was, he said, if I decided I was going to do something, I wasn't just going to be there.
Yeah. Right.
I wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
No matter what it was, whether it was lacrosse. Mm-hmm. He's in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Right.
I asked him if he wanted to be a professional baseball player, could he have been a professional baseball player without sounding, you know, boastful? He was like, yeah, I could have if that's what I chose to do.
Yeah.
I truly believe that.
I do, too.
Basketball, probably, too. I believe his senior year in high school, he averaged over 30 points a game.
He was a freak on the basketball court.
Yeah, I mean, so it's just.
And track and field, too. He won the 100. He won the long jump. He won the high jump. He did whatever he did, he won. And I just think he was one of those rare, rare people, we all know them, that no matter what they try, they're not just good or accomplished, they're great.
Yeah.
52 films.
Yeah, wow, I didn't realize it was that
52
many.
52 films. That is
incredible.
That is incredible.
And I counted four different times to make sure that number was right, and it was 52. Wow. That's a lot of damn films.
Are you sure you want to bite off this next topic?
Yeah, I spent about an hour and a half researching this yesterday. I did.
Because you know that it's one of those things, you can please some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you can never please all of them all of the time.
Yeah, it's like, well, you weren't here last week, but we did some hypothetical trades.
Yeah.
For Jared Allen, just played around with the trade machine. This was Friday.
Right.
I think it was Friday, right? But was it Friday?
Yeah, it was Friday.
And I have people saying it's way too much, way too little.
Right.
This team would never do it. That team would never do it. You're not going to please everybody. It's impossible in this industry.
Not.
But I do like when, at least in those situations, and I think we're going to get to that same point here.
This is gutsy.
When you have people on both sides saying that's not nearly enough for a trade, you're probably in the right spot then for a trade.
Yes.
Now, this is a little different, and I'm going to argue a certain way for certain players, and you may disagree because you value something a little more than I do. But before we get to this, I think there's a clear top four. And I think there's a tier with 5 through 7 that could be rearranged.
Okay.
So, with what we're talking about is ranking the 5 best running backs of all time.
Yeah, this is tough.
We're going to do it. And this was not easy. Not easy at all. And we're going to do it thanks to Calling Companies Championship, July 12th through the 16th at Firestone Country Club. Check them out. More information at calliggolf.com.
So who's your number 5?
By the way, Icky Woods better be in that top 5, or we're going to be fighting.
He made the honorable mentions. Honorable mention. We'll put it that way.
It better be Leroy at number 5.
Leroy also an honorable mention. Real quick with Leroy, you know that play we watched with Jim Brown and Boogie? Was like, that's why running backs start 7 yards back so they get momentum.
Yeah.
That was the Leroy special for 2.5 yards.
Yes, it was.
Like, that was Leroy's bread and butter.
Yeah, that was it.
2.5 yards into the hole, and then
2 yards.
Jim Brown takes it. 75 yards for a touchdown.
2 yards in a cloud of dust.
One of Boogie's, Boogie, I'll tell you one of Leroy's favorite quotes. He said, if you need 3 yards, I'm your guy. If you need 8 yards, I'm not your guy.
No, I think the quote was, if you need 1 yard, I'll get you three. If you need 8 yards, I'll get you three.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right.
He was the man knows what he is and what he is.
No, he truly was. He was the 3 yard guy, but
he ran in a similar style. Now, it wasn't Jim Brown, but similar stylistic runner. Jim Brown, physical, initiated the contact, and you could definitely see there.
He left his mark on defense.
Not afraid.
We call that 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah, that's the good old days. Okay, who's number five?
All right. So 5 and 6 came down to two people, in my opinion. And I gave the edge to Adrian Peterson over Eric Dickerson for the longevity nod. The slight longevity. These two, if you wanted to tell me that Eric Dickerson should be 5 and Peterson 6, fine. I'm not going to throw a fit. Longevity nod. He won an MVP, 4-time first-team All-Pro. He's second on the all-time single-season rushing list behind Dickerson, who still holds that record. But he gets the nod because he's been a elite back for 9 years. A very good back for 12 years and a serviceable running back for 14 years.
Yeah, he stuck around 15. A lot at the end.
He gets the slight longevity nod over Eric Dickerson at number 5.
Dickerson had one of the all-time great seasons ever on a bad team.
Bad team.
Okay.
Bad
Reds team. Yeah, Dickerson is on the cutting room floor. Who's number 4?
So like I said, these next four, I think it's 1 through 4 in some order. You could argue different things. But with number 4, well, with Emmitt Smith. I know he's the all-time rushing yards leader, all-time touchdowns leader. He has 3 Super Bowls, and he's the most reliable back ever. But I don't think at the end of the day he was as good at his peak as the 3 guys ahead of him on this list.
I'm okay with him at 4. I know some people have him 1.
I do not have him 1.
No, I know some do. The reason I'm okay with having him at 4 is because he had a Hall of Fame quarterback. He had a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He had Hall of Famers, I believe, on the offensive line.
Two. Great tight end.
And a great tight end. Not a Hall of Fame, but a great tight end. I mean,
they were just a sensational team.
They had it all.
Yeah.
They had it all. Now, not to take anything away from him, he was a great player. But had he played on the 2010 Browns from 2020, is he Emmitt Smith? Does he elevate the Browns? Probably a little.
Yeah.
But he's not.
He doesn't have the same impact because, like we said, when you're playing around a team with other great players, everything is made easier for you. So that's why I was kind of shocked he was at that spot.
In Jim Brown's case, everything was geared to stop him and only him.
That's right.
If in the 90s and you're playing Dallas and you're going to stop Emmitt Smith, you could take Emmitt Smith out of the game. There were teams that game planned him right out of the game, and they were still able to beat you with Irvin, Troy throwing the ball, and they could beat you other ways.
Yeah.
The Browns beat you one way.
Do you think he has that cowboy effect because he played for America's team?
Probably. I think that has something to do with it, too. We saw all of his games because
he was great.
I'm not going to say he's not great. He deserves to be in the top 5.
Yeah, but I wouldn't
So I think he's appropriately slotted at number 4.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, he is the all-time NFL leader in rushing yards and touchdowns. So say what you want. That is an accomplishment and so on. But I don't think his peak was as high as the next 3.
By the way, I would not have had Adrian Peterson in my top 5.
Would you have Dickerson in that spot?
Why not?
No.
Oh, okay. So then you're going to have somebody. Who then do you have in your top 5 that, you don't know yet?
I'll tell you at the end.
Save it at the end. All right. 3 through 1 here. Don't take it, Steve. Might be the hardest decision I've ever had to do.
It's really tough.
This is literally almost impossible.
That's why I asked you. Are you sure you want to do this?
No, I am. And I spent a lot of time on this. People sometimes, the top 5s, when they're silly, we throw them together, we have some fun. When it comes to this stuff, I'm not going to put my name on it unless I've fully researched.
That's fair.
Feel confident. Now, granted, I didn't see any of these 3 guys playing live. Barry Sanders, who's coming up on this list at some point, I was 4 when he retired.
I saw Barry Sanders.
I saw Barry Sanders his entire career.
So you guys can chime in. Phenomenal. This is going off highlights, stats, research, everything. And at 3 is the aforementioned Barry Sanders.
Okay.
He might be the single most talented player ever. He was untackleable. And his numbers, just flat out absurd. 6 All-Pros. He won an MVP, but he didn't have the playoff success.
And remember, the playoff success cannot be held against him.
In fact, he is the antithesis of Emmitt Smith. If you swapped Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders,
oh my God,
you had 5 Super Bowls.
Yes.
because I do think Barry Sanders is more talented than
Emmitt
Smith.
Way more talented than
him. And he had nobody around him.
Nobody.
They never had a quarterback. Bad.
They had one good wide receiver there, Herman Moore.
Herman Moore was
really good, but they had no quarterback.
Nobody else had defense.
They had nothing.
They were terrible. He was the Browns from 2010 to 2020.
He was the entire team.
That's it.
He was the entire team, and you still couldn't stop him.
He has 6 All-Pros. He won an MVP. His numbers are absurd. His yards per carry, a little lower than you might actually remember.
He had a short career, too.
Well, and that's why – and Jim
he
Brown
retired.
Had a short career,
he
too.
Walked away, just like Jim
did. He walked away, and that's, I think, that was the differentiating factor between him and Walter Payton.
Right.
And we'll get to Walter Payton.
Okay, so, yeah, your top three
are
my
top
two
in a sec, but Payton had some had the longevity nod.
Right.
Barry Sanders, unbelievable in his own right. You look through, he had a 2,000-yard season in 1997 with 11 touchdowns. He led the league with 16 touchdowns in 91, led the league in rushing 4 separate times. He was unbelievable. But his yards per carry for a guy who was as dynamic and as many big plays as he did was a lot lower. It was only 4.4 than I thought, which I guess plays to the fact his line was terrible,
and
so he was such a hit or miss.
Barry had an interesting distinction. He was sometimes a victim of his own skill set.
Yeah.
He has the most negative yard carries in NFL history.
Yeah. Boom or bust. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
It's not even boom or bust. And I understand where you're going with that, but Barry, he told me once in an interview, because I brought that stat up, I said, that's kind of it's a weird distinction to have. And he said, every time I got the ball, I felt like I could run for a touchdown. Even when I was pinned in, even when there was no hole, even when there was no light, I felt like I could get out of it and run for a touchdown. So he did reverse course a lot. I will say this.
His yards per attempt were an even 5.0, according to Pro Football Reference, Mike.
I thought it was higher than 4.4, too. I don't know where you got that number from.
Oh, I was looking. Sorry, it is 5.0. 4.3 was his last season in 90.
Because there's only three. There's only a handful
of guys
that are over 5.
He's one of four guys that average over 5 yards for his career. That's my.
I will say this, though. And it's hard to say because of he didn't have the team success, but if you just go on highlight films alone, Barry Sanders is the best I've ever seen.
To me, he's number one. I
agree.
I would take him as the best back
ever. Listen, as you look at the highlights and you just watch what's a running back supposed to be and do, Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
He's the guy that you put into the time capsule, and if you're telling someone about football 100 years from now and what a running back is supposed to be and do, I show them Barry Sanders.
Nobody in the history of football had more jaw-dropping plays.
No one.
Nobody.
Yep.
Jerry Rice, no position.
What was his last year?
Barry Sanders?
Yeah.
He carried the ball. I mean, he was phenomenal. Carried the ball 343 times for 1,491 yards. So he only had 4 touchdowns.
But what season was that?
98.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was very much like
he was 30 years old.
Like Jim Brown. He played 9 seasons.
Yeah.
Just like Jim Brown. He had 1,400 yards in 16 games, where Jim had 1,500 yards in 14 games.
Yeah.
I remember when it was my first year in Tampa, and before they played, because they used to be in the old NFC Central, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I was a baby.
Yeah, the NFC Central. Yep. And they would talk about – I would interview the defense about, so what's it like getting ready to play Barry Sanders? And they all said, he's our nightmare. He is our worst nightmare. And remember, they had John Lynch, they had Warren Sapp, they had Derek Brooks, they had a defense. And them trying to tackle this guy was literally like
one mistake. If you missed one tackle,
you're done.
That's it.
Yeah, you didn't get a second chance.
I remember as in those years, it was like, because in those days you couldn't see all the football games like you can now. So when the Lions the Lions are getting good again. But for many years, it's boring to see the Lions on Thanksgiving. But when Barry Sanders was on the Lions, that was like one of the highlights of the football season, because growing up in New York, I'm sure here too.
That was your time to see him in the prime time window.
Play that much?
That was it. You ate turkey and you watched Barry Sanders on Thanksgiving, and that was probably the only time you were going to see him all year.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay,
choose Walter Payton.
Walter Payton and Jim Brown are 1 and 2, in my opinion. Now I'm going to give you the case for each, and then I'll tell you who I sided with at number one. Walter Payton, the only running back in NFL history to rush for 1,200 yards 10 times. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
In 10 separate seasons, Walter Payton rushed for 1,200 yards. That is stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid. Third all-time.
Now, I know this is a hypothetical, but had Jim come back, he ran for 1,500 in 14 games. He would have gone over 1,000 yards again.
Right. Right.
Totally fair. Yeah, and obviously these are their own eras in the 60s right. versus the 80s. He did have – Walter Payton had the rushing record when he retired. He also had the elusive MVP for a running back. Jim Brown, on the other hand, short career but arguably the most dominant during his era. Led the league in rushing in 8 of his 9 years. He was an all-pro in 9 seasons, 8 first-team, 1 second-team. He's the only quarterback – I mean, only non-quarterback, excuse me, to ever win 3 MVPs.
Still, to this day.
To this day.
Yeah.
The only non-MVP. So I weighed a little bit of longevity with Payton over the pure dominance of Jim Brown, and this is not because of what happened over the weekend, but I came to the conclusion that the most dominant running back ever was Jim Brown. I couldn't get over the fact that he had – I understand different era, 60s. As Leroy said, he weighed more than half his linemen. But 3 MVPs, only non-quarterback to ever do that, and he was the best of the best at his position all 9 years he played. He walked away before he was done, and I know you can say the same thing about Barry Sanders, but at the end of the day, I went Jim Brown at 1, Payton 2, Sanders 3, Emmitt Smith 4, and Adrian Peterson.
See, I would have O.J. ahead of both Emmitt and Peterson.
Oh, really? You'd have him that high?
I would.
I would say you could, because when you said Dickerson, I would say you could put O.J. in the top.
Dickerson's right there. I'll tell you a guy who gets left out all the time of these debates, but shouldn't be.
Bo Jackson? Is,
well, Bo Jackson didn't do it long enough, although he would have been. Marshall Faulk.
Faulk is in that category, right there.
I feel like he gets lost.
As dual-purpose backs went.
My only beef with Peterson, and obviously Peterson's a top 10 and arguably a top 5 back of all time. My only beef with Peterson is for his era, he was kind of a one-dimensional back.
Yeah.
You know, for
quick question though. In his era, dual-dimensional backs weren't as big of a thing as they are now, though.
That's true. Well, but the running backs weren't asked to. But they were starting to. You were starting to see guys. In
Thurman
his
Thomas
era.
Was a dual-purpose
he was,
back.
Yes.
There were a lot of backs that played in that era. But yeah, to your point, it wasn't like now every team has. They want.
But Marshall Faulk was the two.
Marshall Faulk was like
the outlier at the time. People were. That's
he
why
was kind of the OG, really. Yeah. That really did both very
Edger
well.
Edgerrin James did both.
Yeah. Edgerrin James is another one.
Gotcha. There's so many great backs. Yes. Any of those guys you can argue. Yeah. I've always personally felt Emmitt Smith is a little overrated. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Jim Brown, Payton, Walter Payton, and Barry Sanders, you could put those three in any order. Yeah. I think they're 1A, B, and C. If I had to choose, I would put Barry 1, Jim Brown 2, and Payton 3.
Did you watch Payton Bowl?
I did.
You did. Okay, you had the
eye
test.
What was his rookie year? I can't remember.
Walter Payton, give me one sec.
I think Walter Payton was the purest runner of all of the running backs. In
75.
The open field, Eric Metcalf was another guy that looked like a gazelle in the open field.
Yeah.
Walter Payton ran beautifully.
Yeah, he was incredible.
His form, like Jim was a tank. You know, he was a tank.
Right.
He was a bruiser.
Yeah.
And O.J. was a little like that, but O.J. also had, world-class speed at that time. But I just thought that Walter Payton – just in terms of his gait and his running style,
I can easily
see him high-stepping with his legs, but just in perfect form.
Right.
He was elusive.
Amazing.
He was pretty to watch.
He was. And I was only 4 years old when Walter Payton was a rookie in the NFL, so obviously I don't remember the early portion of his career.
Yeah.
But when the Bears won the Super Bowl with him, I mean, he was their entire offense.
I thought it was a disgrace that they let Refrigerator score a touchdown Walter Payton.
He was angry about that.
And he should be. They scored 55 points.
Yeah, I know. That was crazy.
Wait, he didn't score in that game?
No, he put William the Refrigerator Perry, who is their gimmick, back.
Yeah.
So you probably don't remember.
Yeah,
he was massive. And he was a defensive tackle. And they used him in a gimmick offense at the goal line. And his nickname was the Refrigerator. They couldn't stop him. But when it was obvious that the game was well in hand, it was a blowout, on third and goal, they took Walter Payton out of the game and put the Refrigerator in the game, and Fridge scored the touchdown. And Ditka, to this day, there are people in Chicago that have never forgiven him for that.
I did not realize that Payton did not score in that championship.
And he was very angry about it.
And he should have been.
He was a calm, soft-spoken
guy, never controversial, but he held that as
I know a lot of, when they did the 30 for 30 on the Bears, a lot of the other players talked about that Payton was pissed about that. And that, I mean, Jim McMahon, he had that one good year. That was his only good year, really.
That was
basically it. But and they had who was their great wide receiver? Willie Gault. Yeah, I mean, that's the greatest team I've ever seen.
It was the most dominant in my lifetime, even more so than the Ravens when they had that great defense.
Yeah, obviously the
Giants
gave up
9 points a game.
Yeah.
And their offense was electric. The only thing that stood between them and a perfect season was the Miami Dolphins on a Monday night.
Right.
And it was really billed as if any, you know, this can
right.
Can the Dolphins
with Marino
keep someone else from having a perfect season, because they went 15-1 and then won the Super Bowl.
And they just in the playoffs they
blew everybody away.
Everybody.
It was a 55-7 or something in the Super Bowl
against the Patriots.
They had the Super Bowl shuffle.
Yeah.
It was that 85 Bears team
was ridiculous.
Unlike anything I've ever seen.
Last Walter Payton stat before we do some internet Jim Brown memories and we'll move on to the Guardians. How many passing touchdowns do you think Walter Payton threw in his career?
He did throw a couple. I think he did. I think they had a couple plays.
Three?
Ooh, eight. I wouldn't have said that many.
Three?
Bull nailed it.
Eight?
Eight.
I just guessed.
They used to do that little sprint out. They would pitch him the ball.
I'm definitely rocking with Bull tonight.
And it usually be wide open.
I'm taking the Tigers. I'm throwing
the
extra.
Let's go Tigers. El Tigres.
Wow. He threw a number out there and just landed. Bull, you got it.
You know, Barry Sanders never threw a passing touchdown, so now we have to, you know, picking hairs in that debate.
Hey, there you go.
There's your –
What was his quarterback rating? What would his career quarterback rating be? 157?
Wasn't bad. Hold on. He threw 34 it was not good. He threw 34 passes in his career, completed 11. Eight of those 11 went for touchdowns. He also threw six interceptions.
You know what it speaks to? It speaks to how defenses played him. When he got the ball, all 11 came for him.
Right, sure.
And that left somebody wide open in the end zone.
Yeah.
You don't hold the level of competition that Jim Brown had to play against compared to Walter Payton against him in the
I mean, I do a little bit, and that's why I think I put Barry Sanders ahead of him.
We're getting better. Our game was evolving. And
right.
Things like that.
Compared to OJ?
Compared to Jim Brown.
Oh.
Compared to Walter Payton.
Jim is the – you know, right. When you look at those guys and say, which of these is not like the other – it's Jim because of the era he played in. All of these guys are modern era football backs.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's really hard to distinguish between those three.
Yeah, it's
and even
tough.
The other guys that we're all mentioning here. I feel like we're forgetting. Like, what about the guys playing now? Who, you know, like they got to do it longer.
Five. I thought I wanted these.
What's your top five?
Just know what I had: AP, LT, Chris Johnson, Shady McCoy, and Sean Alexander were just five backs.
Yeah, you're a youngin'.
With me,
a young dude.
LaDainian Tomlinson, actually, we left him. LaDainian Tomlinson is in the conversation. He was in the top 10 for sure. Longer honorable mention list. Those other guys, you know, of the last 20 years are in the conversation.
Yeah, this is my list of
that's
guys.
That's the guys that you
I've
saw
seen.
That right, you right. remember, and all of those guys were electric difference
makers. I just remember that exciting that CJ2K season. Just
oh,
the whole
God.
By the way, now, he's got a long way to go. But I believe Nick Chubb, now again, you got to hold it against him that he doesn't catch passes in terms of the all-time list.
Sure.
But I believe he's third all-time in yards per attempt, Nick Chubb.
He is.
It's going to be
one
so
of
the,
he's
hard.
One of four that's averages more than 5 yards.
Marion Motley is actually number one of all time who played running back even before Jim Brown.
But do you was he number 60 or 61 or something? Like, don't you have to be in the 30s to even 20s to enter this conversation?
Yeah,
I feel bad for Nick Chubb just because in today's game, it's a pass-happy league. It's going to be so tough for a modern running back to crack these top five lists going forward because everything is so pass-happy now.
It is.
They want to see points put up. They don't want to see a dominant running back. That's why the outliers of the Derrick Henrys and the Nick Chubbs are so highly praised because you see the running back list just getting depreciated.
If I'm Nick Chubb at this point, I think top three runners of the football in the sport now.
Yeah, sure.
From January to April or just take it all the way to camp, August, July, I'm gonna catch 250 footballs a day.
Yeah.
I'm going to run routes. I'm going to work with guys that have been great pass-catching running backs in the past. And I'm going to eliminate that as a criticism of my game.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, it's not like, you know, remember in that playoff game he did have some drops. But for the most part, he hasn't had drops. They just don't throw it to him a lot. I wonder this year, even though Jerome Ford will be there, Jerome Ford is not, I would think, I know we're talking about they're going to throw a lot, and I agree with that. But I think Nick Chubb will have a higher percentage of plays on the field than he's ever had in his career this year.
I hope so.
And
I hope
so I think he'll get more passes this year. I wonder if he ends
I
up,
hope so.
I wonder if he ends
that.
Up with a career high in receiving yards for him, which is probably not that high.
No, it'd be interesting to see if that happens.
Yeah.
We're going to get to our internet comments and internet memories. Jim Brown from our wonderful viewers and audience out there. And as always, whenever we ask the internet for responses, it's brought to us by our dear friends at PCC Airfoils. If you're looking for a job with career advancement and great benefits, well, PCC Airfoils is a leading manufacturer in Northeast Ohio. All locations of PCC Airfoils in Eastlake, Menor, Wycliffe, and Minerva are hiring for all positions starting at $18 and up, plus full benefit packages, paid time off, and a signing bonus. You can apply online at precast.com/careers to learn more. We got some text on Haymarket. We got some YouTube community comments. It's easiest to pull them in on Tag Board from Twitter, so we'll go with a couple tweets here. But this first one is from Michael Antonce. Well, I was too young to get the privilege to watch him play the game of football. As a legendary human who was a Cleveland icon who helped unite people and build equality through athletics, he'll forever be remembered. The world lost a great man, and the city lost an icon, RIP. And we got two more here. This one I appreciated. Back in 96 when he boxed the aliens to help save the world, an iconic moment in the career of Jim Brown. How could y'all forget that? And this from the April, and she says, for me, Jim Brown, in addition to his greatness on the field, will always be remembered in one of the single funniest scenes in a movie ever.
I'm gonna get you, sucker.
I don't know what movie that's from. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to get you, sucker.
I'm going to get you, sucker. Wasn't it a parody? Was it a
it was a spoof.
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoof.
Also, oh, my God, I just forgot. He was in the movie with Schwarzenegger. Oh, God. The Running Man.
Was he?
The Running Man. Yes, look that up.
Well, I have to watch some Jim Brown movie. I don't know if I've ever seen
him
in a movie.
So remember The Running Man? It was like a game show.
I didn't see The Running Man.
Okay, so for those who don't remember, Running Man was like in Schwarzenegger's heyday.
He was. You're correct.
Right? I just remembered it now because he said boxing, and I remember. So The Running Man, Schwarzenegger was in jail for who the hell knows what. It's like a dystopian society in the U.S., all of Earth. And Schwarzenegger, he's either going to get killed for being a criminal, or he can go on this game show where you could get killed, but if you survive, you're clear of all your criminal behavior. So Schwarzenegger goes on the show. By the way, the host of the show was Richard Dawson, who used to host Family Feud.
Yeah, Family Feud.
And the game's rigged, but in each event, you have to fight against one of the, you know, the guys who try to kill the Running Man.
Right.
There are all these different characters, almost like wrestling. And the champion, the all-time champ, was Jim Brown. And for most of the movie, he's in the high rollers room, hanging out with the Mucky Mucks. But then those guys keep getting killed. So eventually, he goes down to fight against Schwarzenegger. It was pretty cool.
Wow. I like.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that movie in a while, but he was great.
I haven't seen it, but the concept sounds fun.
Yeah.
All right, more internet comments?
Mike. Yeah.
No, those are the internet comments we got. We got so many that are coming in, it's hard to. Oh, we do have one super chat, though. Anthony sent it to me. Give me one sec to pull it up. This is from. Where did he put it? Sorry. This is from Maurice Lucas. No relation to me. My birthday is your show's anniversary. I live in Phoenix, but I was born in Cleveland. My name is Herman Moore, and I went to Shaw High School. So thanks for watching, Maurice. We appreciate
nice.
It.
Very
and
cool.
And happy belated birthday, about 2 weeks out. So
West Coast love.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. All right. Any more Jim Brown stuff? I feel like we spent an hour 40 on it.
We've covered it all.
I think we have. Yeah.
Kudos to us. We did it. And we will miss Jim Brown here in Cleveland and around the country.
No doubt.
In some other sporting news, not a good weekend for the Guardians, guys. Three losses to the Mets, each by one run.
Well, in each of these games, they blew leads late.
The Mets won in their last three at-bats.
Yeah. Now, in the first game of the doubleheader yesterday, the Guardians were down, they came back, and then they still lost late.
In the eighth inning. I mean, Stephan came in and walked a guy, gave up a home run.
Their pen's been a disaster.
One of the things we talked about, Bull.
Yeah.
And this was one of my concerns when I went to Arizona in spring training, and I talked to the pitchers, I talked to everybody that on the staff. The one thing that we were very concerned about was year to year,
you never know.
Cannot replicate that kind of success.
Yeah.
It's literally like you're throwing darts in the dark. And they, as good as they were last year, they've been that bad this year.
They've been, I'm not going to say he's been terrible, but he's not been good.
He still leads the majors in saves.
Yeah, but
I think he's second in saves, but he already has.
But he's already blown more this year than he did.
And they've got 12 as a staff.
Yeah.
12 blown saves.
I mean, he's been Karinchak's been awful. Gave up the grand slam to Pete Alonso on Friday night.
I think he's given up 6 or 7 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, as a whole, the bullpen's been just awful.
Yeah,
pretty much across the board. And those are just soul crushing losses.
You had a huge lead
on the Mets on Friday. You let it get away.
They were up 7-2. They gave up a grand slam to tie it.
Yep.
And they end up losing. They take the lead in the 10th inning. They score 2 runs. They give up 3 runs.
It was unbelievable. And the 3 runs they give up, they had given up 1. Obviously, you had the runner on second. But then it was 2 outs.
Yeah.
And then single, single, single. And Lindor kills him. Knocks in the game-winning run on Friday. Lindor hit the home run to tie the game last night.
My son Corey was at the game Friday. And he's like, Dad,
oh,
that crowd, it felt like a playoff game. Yeah. Now, granted, the Mets have been struggling. They're just now over 500
right.
with the win in game one, I think, of the doubleheader yesterday. But all of this being said, and I'm pissed. I'm telling you, I'm furious.
Yeah.
I am furious, and I'm going to the game tonight.
Yeah.
I'm furious right now. All of that being said.
They're 4.5 out.
They're not out of it. You know, you're playing in the worst division in baseball.
I feel like every day I keep expecting to look at the standings and see them 10 out because they play. They've lost 20 of their last 31 games. They're 11-20 in their last 31, and they're only 4.5 games out. And it's not like they were playing that great before this. Their season high is 3 games over 500. They were 9-6. I'm sorry. 9-6.
You're right.
And they've lost 20 of 31 since then.
Oh,
so
that's a problem.
Like, if you're 9-6 and you lose 20 of 31, in most cases,
you're
double digit games.
You're done. Even if it's still May,
right.
You're done.
But the whole division stinks.
If they were in the East, they'd be 15 games out.
If they were in the East,
the Twins would be tied for last in the East.
That's a good point. The Twins would be tied for last. They wouldn't be 15, they'd be 14.
Everybody's
good except for Oakland.
If you look across, Boogie, one sec. If you look across the American League, there are only 5 teams in the entire American League with a negative run differential.
Yeah.
Only 5. The A's, -168, which is absurd. just flat out absurd.
If this was soccer, they'd get relegated to Triple A.
The A's, by the way, have given – and the other 4 are the
– And the other 4 in the American League Central outside of the Twins.
The A's, by the way, are allowing 2 runs more per game than the second worst team in baseball.
Oh,
2 more runs per game. I think the White Sox are the second worst.
You know what? The Sox are in for a series starting tonight.
If the White Sox win the series, the Guardians are going to be in 4th place.
This is where they got to get hot. I'm pissed right now.
Yeah.
But I'm not throwing in the towel.
No.
Because why would you? Now the Cardinals are starting to play better baseball.
They've gotten hot.
You know what's interesting?
They just gave my Dodgers
the
trouble.
The Cardinals, the Yankees, the Astros. There's some teams in there I'm missing.
Dodgers got off to a bad start.
They got off to horrible starts that are now turning around. Now, Tito notoriously starts slow.
Yes.
His team, this is their trademark. And they usually get hot in June. It's time. Look, you're 2 weeks away from being in first place.
Yeah.
You're a week away if you get red hot.
Yeah, the problem right now is, and I still think they're going to win the division. And right now, they're an awful baseball team. This moment in time, they're an awful baseball team. They're not hitting well. They're not pitching well. They're not doing anything
I think
well.
Their starters are throwing well.
That's the interesting thing this weekend. All 3 starters were solid or better.
Pitched well enough to win the game.
And, you know, there's some issues in the back end of the rotation, obviously, with the injuries, but I'm fine with the rotation.
Yeah, but they've addressed that, with
Well, Bybee's pitched very well.
Bybee.
Yes.
And when is Williams coming? Like, have you seen what Williams is
doing? Yeah, he's been great.
I
would think Bybee.
Guys can't hit him.
All right, and Bo Naylor needs to stay in the majors.
Absolutely.
Now, this is ridiculous.
On May 18th, which I think was Thursday maybe, or Wednesday or Thursday, the catchers for the Guardians were hitless for the month.
Yeah, we were talking about that last week.
I made that whole segment on Friday.
Bull, you and I
could
take 66 major league at-bats. We're going to get a hit. We're going to get a
hit. Maybe you could. I don't know.
I built an entire segment for you on Friday about that, and then you call that sick. Just so you
know.
Oh, man.
That was a bummer.
I miss Kirkshin. Tim Kirkshin was here.
He was great.
We asked him about you, too.
I love Tim Kirkshin. I was so bummed that I missed him.
Did you hear the story he told about you?
Did he tell the story about spring training when I jumped
hit
in
the batting cage?
Yeah. He was like, I don't know, Jay.
He was the one. I think it was Kirkshin who said there was a group of us. Mark Mulder from the old Royals pitcher was there.
A's.
A's.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, and I can't remember, but I think it was Kirkshin started, and he goes, man, we were watching guys take BP, and the pitching machine was set at 90, and it's the kind that you don't see. It looks just like a pitcher.
Yeah.
You see the video, and the ball just shoots right out. And he's like, man.
Jay, do you want to hear Tim? We have Tim telling the story. You want to hear it?
Sure.
It's only a minute long.
Yeah.
All right, Steve.
He underestimated me.
Take it.
Jay was a dear friend of mine. We went to the bat. We did a show in like Phoenix or something doing the Giants. And Jay still plays baseball at a pretty high level. So he jumped in against the pitching machine throwing, it was at least 85.
90.
It might have been 90. He said, I can hit this. And I'm thinking, Jay's a good ball player. He's a good athlete. I'm not disputing. I said, I'm not sure he can hit 90. And after about three pitches, he hit a bullet. He hit a rocket. And I said, all right, there's Jay Crawford for you. And I played catch with him a few times. He can throw a baseball. So it's always good to find someone who's in the business who's actually played at least one of the games. It's not necessary to have played in order to be a good writer, analyst, reporter, but it sure helps if you have played before, if you know what 90 miles an hour looks like, and yeah, Jay Crawford does.
Jay talks about his playing days all the time, so I'm glad we got some real confirmation that he actually does know how to throw. Yeah,
Jay is a dear friend of mine.
What's that?
We went to the bat.
Is baseball your favorite sport?
Oh, by far. Yeah. By far.
James is a professional baseball player, Boogie.
Yeah. And we opened our season Saturday with a big win, 12-4.
Oh, nice.
Six innings, one earned, 3-for-5 at the dish.
Nice.
Yeah,
red
big,
hot
big
start.
Win against playing? A very good team in our – what's that?
You still playing?
Still play. Yeah.
Where?
Still play. It's a Northern Ohio
anything down there in Canary or no?
Yeah, we play games in Akron.
Really?
Yeah,
catches up the arm every year.
I do. I got to tell you, though, this was the first year that I didn't throw at all. You know, I just didn't. I've been doing a lot of, you know, different exercises for pitching, but I showed up, get the ball for the season opener, went six innings, 5 Ks, walked 3, which is a lot for me. I do not
terrible
walk guys. I know. Listen,
it's honestly
now,
embarrassing.
It is embarrassing.
Get off my show.
I was seriously. Now, one of them was a 3-2 pitch that was beautiful. My catcher even turned around and he never says anything. My catcher said, where was that? So it should have been 2 walks, but technically it was 3 walks. But I thought my arm would be killing me because I probably threw 90 pitches.
Did you yell at the umpire on that pitch, by the way?
What's that?
Did you yell at the
umpire? No, I didn't.
Do you have a fan?
We are
going
to go out. We will shoot one of Jay's games. That's
yes,
a promise. Every
absolutely
we'll
have
go
to
out, Mike Jay up and shoot one
do
of his games.
Do you have a fan club?
Yeah, it's very small. Family, you know.
I might
family
pop
members
up one of them.
All
games
right. All right. Very good.
Body,
he had one
body
more
fan
paint before
going.
I learned he walked 3 batters in his debut.
Yeah.
Off the Jay bandwagon.
That will be. I will not walk 3 guys in a game the rest of the year. But that's that story. What was true, and that what he left out was he said, I'll pay for a group dinner, because there were guys that were in that were hitting in the cage that, you know, were, I'm not saying they would miss a lot, but there were guys that 90, they were swinging and missing, and he's like, there's no way you're touching that. So when they were done, it wasn't the Giants, we were at the Giants the day before, it was at the Indians, and they said, go ahead, go in there, and we'll give you 3 pitches to square one up. I fouled the first one off, I hit the second one. It was in a cage. I wish it wasn't, because, and I think Tim would tell you this, my third one might have been a home run. Mm. I mean, it was completely squared up and hit to dead left center field, and it was crushed. And everybody that was in there was like, what in the hell just happened? And I just dropped the bat, walked out of the cage, and I said, Tim, we're going to the most expensive restaurant in Phoenix, and you're paying. Because it wasn't just dinner for me. He said, I'll buy the group, our whole Baseball Tonight group.
How big was
dinner
that bill?
It was, I don't know, but it wasn't small because we could all eat.
Are you a big Dodgers fan?
So-so.
But that was your team growing up?
Yeah, that's my team now because I'm an L.A. guy. So
yeah.
Learning now, understanding the game more now, I'm a huge Dodger fan. Love Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and things like
Mookie
that.
Betts
so yeah.
But you know what's – Ronald Acuna is having the kind of season that you remember 30 years from now.
Yeah.
He's running. It feels like he's running away with the MVP race already.
And they got a great rookie too.
They've got a great club.
Their whole team's really
just
good. Spencer Strider stacked. Yeah. Real quick, one last reminder that the Lunch Drive, the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show, is sponsored by Colet Company's Championship. You can see your favorite golfers at Firestone Country Club on the 12th through the 16th of July. Check them out at coletgolf.com. And Boogie mentioned L.A. He mentioned his Dodgers, but we can't end the show without giving Boogie a chance to cry about his beloved Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, man.
I've had a terrible weekend. On the Lakers, and it was terrible.
Mahler's getting their tails kicked. My Lakers losing. We're down 0-3. This is terrible.
You think they can even win one game?
We got to win tonight. We got to win one.
Well, both series are 3-0, yeah. Right? I mean, this is a nightmare for the NBA.
LeBron's been down 3-0 three times in his career in the playoffs.
And never won the...
He won one game.
Oh, I thought he was...
His teams are 1-3 after being down 3-0.
Their role players are playing amazing. Bruce Brown's playing out of his mind.
This is a team, isn't it? I mean, this is not just one
person.
But the thing about it is, I think people are forgetting because of the resurgence that the Lakers have had, how at the bottom we were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I know.
They're the number one seed. They're the number one seed.
Right, and nobody respected them because they hadn't done anything in the playoffs before.
Right. They're the number one seed for a reason. So let's not get off. Let's go talk about those Boston Celtics now.
Yeah.
That's a much more embarrassing.
They're losing to the eighth seed.
But let me ask you this. Is it embarrassing for the Celtics or is it impressive for the Heat? Because I have to tell you,
I think it's both.
For a team that was on the edge of elimination, they look like they can't be stopped right now.
How have you ever seen a team a better example of how much coaching matters?
Yeah. No, I don't think I have.
We don't think of coaching in the NBA like we do in football, and it doesn't mean as much.
And as good as Spoelstra has been, oh my God,
I didn't understand in game two. Remember in game two of Miami Boston Grant Williams was talking trash to Jimmy Butler?
Yes.
Like, at that point, Jimmy Butler just went bonkers.
Crazy.
And they never double-teamed him.
Never switched it. And that's on the coaching staff.
I don't understand that.
I kept watching it thinking, when are they going to adjust here? And they didn't. And I think
Make of that, Mike, as Mr. Basketball? Like, how did they not double-team Butler in game two when he's gone bananas?
So, a couple things. One, Joe Mazzulla yesterday was asked after the game.
He fell on his sword.
Have you lost the locker room? Have you lost your team? And he said, yeah. And to hear coach.
You never hear them say that.
Admit, and I'll find the exact quote.
He said, I've got to do better. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have my team prepared.
Yep.
Like, he fell hard on the sword.
Yeah.
But guess what, Mike? He had to. We're all seeing the same thing.
Yeah, but there's a different, like, the Lakers lost game three. They missed some shots. They came out and played. They were ready.
Yeah, right.
The Celtics were not ready last night.
Not even close.
They got humiliated. 2-0,
going on the road, knowing you're the prohibitive favorite, you're playing an 8 seed, which, as Bull alluded to, we said the regular season now means essentially nothing ever.
It just goes to show you that the regular season.
But to go into that scenario, knowing the adjustments that had to be made, knowing that they are essentially a one-man team with Jimmy Butler leading the show, and even though Gabe Vincent and the other role players have been phenomenal, Max Strus, Duncan Robinson.
Vincent was the leading scorer in the game last night.
Butler's the antagonist of the whole offense.
He's the guy.
To come in flat and not have your guys ready, and I stand by Boogie. I actually would love for you to chime in here. When I was playing, and I do think 99 of 100 times, it's on the players to get ready to play. Like, if you're not ready to play in game 3 of a playoff series, that's on the players.
I don't think that's what he meant, Mike. I don't think he meant, like, fire and brimstone, let's go. I think he meant X's and O's.
He did.
So you think he meant his adjustments weren't there?
Yeah.
But in the first quarter, when Miami came out and threw the first haymaker, that's when, in my opinion, a coach calls timeout.
Get a timeout and
rallies and says, draw a line in the effing sand.
Let's go.
We're on which side? Go. And he did not do that yesterday. He fell on the sword. Boogie, is it the same in a football locker room where it's on the players to kind of get up for the moment? Or do you guys rely on the coach to almost set the scene and get you guys ready for war?
No, it's definitely the players. You know, the coach prepares you throughout the week, and you can have the same mindset and mentality of your coach, but at the end of the day, it is the players who are out there playing.
They've got to provide the fight.
They got to go out there and execute the game plan that you've worked throughout the week, because it sucks that sometimes coaches are at blame when they might have a good game plan. You had a great week of preparation. They're going into it feeling confident, and the players just go out there starting flat. But it's on the coach that'll come up and say, oh, I let the guys down, just because he is the head coach.
Right.
But it's definitely on the players. Me being a current athlete, it's on the players to go out there and get it done.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought that, I mean, Boston is too good. They're too good of a team. They have way more talent than Miami
has.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And this is, if you ever want to make a, you know, because there are some that say, it's not, coaching in the NBA is a joke. In the playoffs, it's everything.
Well, that's
who
what
do you guys
really
think is going to win the title?
Now I think Miami.
I think it's going to be Denver, but yeah, I think it's going to be a really good finals.
I hope it is, because these are eggs.
Yeah. Who you got, Mike?
I would take Denver. And to Boogie's point with the coaching adjustments, and Boogie, I hate to go back to the Lakers, but there's nothing to break down in the Heat-Celtics game. The Nuggets-Lakers series has come down to Bruce Brown, Jeff Green, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hitting open shots that D'Angelo Russell and Lonnie Walker and Malik Beasley, who hasn't really played.
Those guys had
been hitting them earlier in the playoffs. They were hitting those
shots.
Their role players are
playing much better than our role players. But on the topic of adjustments, I will say that at this point, Darvin Ham has been at least trying different lineups, different adjustments, trying to
– But he hasn't got his finger on anything that works.
It's just not working. And sometimes you have to tip your hat to certain guys making threes because we, like, make adjustments. If we double Jokic or double Jamal Murray, somebody's going to be open. And if their players are hitting those threes – You can't cover everybody. You have to tip your hat.
And you do have to pick your poison and live and die with it.
Yeah, they're shooting great from the three-point line right now, and they're playing with confidence. So he's trying to make adjustments. And we've been in each of these games. We've been in the games.
You know what's been interesting?
Game two, Jamal Murray did not play well the first three quarters. And then he went nuts in the fourth quarter.
He's seen one go in, and it was like an ocean.
And then in game three, Jokic didn't do much the first three quarters. A lot of that was foul trouble because he was on the bench.
Right.
But then he went nuts in the fourth quarter and just put the team on his
back.
Which
of the teams down 0-3 has a better chance of winning a game?
The Lakers. Just because of sample size we've seen.
They've been close.
The Lakers are at home three games by a combined 20 points. Celtics lost by 26 last night.
And I believe it was
the Lakers are at home.
But I still think I keep looking at this roster going, how in the hell is this happening?
I think the Celtics want to go home now at this point. That's the way it feels.
I think Jimmy Butler's ripped their heart out.
He did.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think he's ripped their heart out. So that's why I would go with Los Angeles, because we have been competitive in these three games. The last one, I think we were up by 1 point in the fourth quarter with 7 minutes to go. And then we had a stretch when they went on that 13-0 run, and we lost it there. But if we can just make some shots, I think we'll be okay.
Has the team ever come back from 0-3?
I think it's 0 and 149.
Yeah. By the way,
it's only happened in baseball.
Yeah, I think we're just asking for one game. Just let us not get swept.
Remember in game two, remember that, like, down the stretch, the last minute of game two, the Lakers were down 4, I believe, with like 50 seconds to go, and LeBron missed an easy layup.
LeBron's been horrible shooting the ball.
And, like, you wonder,
game one, he's just
Will we look back and say that was the moment where LeBron stopped being LeBron?
It could be before then. You know, he missed a dunk.
He did miss a dunk.
That was the first time he's ever looked relatively human.
I believe it was game one or game two.
I thought it was game one he missed the dunk.
Because
one
was the dunk and then two was the blown
layup. We were up 8 points at that moment, and that could have put us up 10. Yeah. He misses the dunk, and I feel like the momentum just
went
down.
He has not looked like LeBron James in this series.
And then in game one.
I mean, he's old.
I mean, he's still 23-7 and 12.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's still better than most players in the NBA, but he's not – he doesn't look like
– Now – If you're looking for the Herculean ending to, like, you know, what does LeBron need to do?
Yeah.
Well, what he needs to do is dig out of this hole. You come back from this and win this series and then go on to win a championship by beating Miami and Spoelstra and Riley and all the hatred that exists between those groups.
Yeah.
Wow.
How about Kevin Love has a chance to win another championship?
Do you think the NBA is
now? He hasn't played great in this series.
No, he hasn't. But he has been a factor for them.
But he's still a starter.
He was a factor for them late in the regular season and early in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he starts. I mean, he doesn't play a ton of minutes, but he starts.
Do you think the NBA is mad? They were on that road to fight for 18 Lakers Celtics.
Oh, they wanted that bad.
Do you think that?
Let me tell you, the difference between a Lakers Celtics series and a Denver Miami series
ratings
is a couple $100 million in ratings.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to Miami Denver. I think it'll be a good series.
Fun. It'll be refreshing. Yeah. It'll be different. But it won't be a ratings.
What do we got in overtime, Mike?
We got the rest of the viewer questions from Friday. And Boogie, we'll get your insight on a couple of things we didn't get to on the show. So we'll see you on overtime.
Boogie on the hot seat.
Cleveland Sports Show.
Boogie on a hot seat.
Uh-oh.